Hello and welcome into golf today. Ryan Lavner, Rex Harden. Wow, you want to talk about a weekend of extremes. On one hand, you had another dispiriting episode from Tiger Woods, and on the other, Gary Woodland offering one of the most inspiring, inspirational, uplifting, encouraging performances you could possibly imagine. The latter is why we love this sport.
You're a writer, you can keep going. Break out the thesaurus, because I know you can just keep going talking about what an amazing performance this was. You said extremes. I'm going to go emotional extremes, because certainly what we saw from Gary Woodland on Sunday, after everything that he's gone through, we're going to break it down. We're going to get a lot of reaction from across the golf world. But then it was preceded on Friday by what was a frantic Friday when it comes to Tiger Woods. He was in another auto accident. If you had told me this is what we were talking about a week and a half before the Masters, I'm not sure I would have believed you.
Yeah, an absolutely loaded show. It's just amazing to think, as it relates to Gary Woodland, that 3 weeks after he bared his soul with you ahead of the Players' Championship, 2.5 years removed from brain surgery, 9 years absent from his victory at the U.S. Open, that we'd be talking about Gary Woodland in this light. Gary sat down with Rex to share for the first time publicly that he was struggling with PTSD following his surgery in 2023.
I'm still struggling. Obviously, about 3 years ago now, we found the lesion on my brain and ended up having surgery a couple months later. And that part's been amazing. The doctors went in and they removed as much as they could. They removed the part that was causing the seizures and the episodes I was having, and I haven't had any of that. And that part's been great. But I've still battled symptoms the whole time. And a year ago now, I was diagnosed with PTSD. And, and it's been hard. It's a battle that I didn't understand when we started. You know, it's been a while now where I'm starting to learn and I'm starting to understand, but it's been hard.
Why is it important to come forward right now to talk about this?
I can't waste energy anymore hiding this. And I'm blessed with a lot of support out here. The tour and everyone's just been amazing. Every week I come out and everyone's so excited and happy that I'm back. And, you know, I hear that every week. It's so nice to see you pass this. It's so nice to see you 100%. And I appreciate that love and support, but inside I feel like I'm dying. And I feel like I'm living a lie. And that, I don't want to waste energy on that anymore.
Now, Woodland would end up missing the cut at the Players' Championship, but in Tampa, he started to build some momentum, tying for 14th, his best finish in nearly a year on the PGA Tour. And on Thursday of this week, he discussed the response he's received from that interview with Rex.
Yeah, the response has been, it's been big, and it's also been big for me because I got a lot of relief. I literally felt like I got 1,000 pounds off my back that day. It was hard to do. I was crying going into the interview, and I left feeling 1,000 pounds lighter.
How about that? After the turmoil in his life since 2023, Gary Woodland saying this is the best he's ever been from a physical and technical standpoint. Again, his fifth victory on the PGA Tour. This one, pretty special, as Carr mentioned, into the Masters, the PGA, signature events on the PGA Tour. And afterward, Gary Woodland continued to speak with the media.
Gary, if I would have told you when you got done with that interview with Rex a couple weeks ago that we'd be sitting here right now, what would you have told me?
I'd be asking what we're talking about while we're sitting here. I've known my game's trending in the right direction for a long time. I haven't seen any results, and I saw some signs last week. I really did, and I don't know what I finished, 14th, I think, but I played a lot better than that. I got a lot of confidence. I just haven't had any confidence. But I haven't had any energy to do it too. And it's been tough. There's been the start of this year, those 4 weeks I played, I was in a dark place. And I luckily had a week or two off there and kind of reset a little bit. And then I decided to come out with this and kind of got some confidence last week. And it's kind of just continuing that down that road. So I'm definitely in a better place than I was a month ago. I've talked to some veterans that told me you can't do this on your own. You got to talk. And it was just time. You know, my therapist, my wife, more than anybody keep telling me, I got to take care of myself before I can help people. That's hard. I want to help people. And I realized after the first 4 weeks when I played how hard it was on me that I had to take care of myself because I was getting off. And that interview was the first step in that.
Lab, I tease you all the time for being a little bit overly sentimental when it comes to these types of stories. I think both of you and I are going to struggle with this one. If you look at it from a storyteller's perspective, and that's what you do, what stands out? What he's overcome or what he's been able to do?
Yeah, I mean, I was blubbering like a baby in my hotel room last night. I think everyone who was watching that interview and knows Gary, has spoken with Gary, understood the journey that he's been on over the past 2.5 years. And we rarely associate, Rex, pro golfers with being brave and courageous and heroic. And I think Gary Woodland certainly was that 3 weeks ago in your interview with him, sort of opening himself up, letting the golf world, letting the sports world know exactly what he was doing. But I can't even fathom what he has been dealing with over the past couple years post-2023 brain surgery. Not just the recovery from that, but the managing of the medications, dealing with all of the stimuli of playing professional golf, and dealing with the post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms, all, oh yeah, while playing what I would argue is the most mental sport on the planet at the highest level on the PGA Tour. It's unfathomable that he's been able to play at this level. It's really hard to win on the PGA Tour. Regardless, we've seen that with all the players trying to close out 54-hole leads during the Florida swing. But to be able to do it with all that he is battling mentally and physically, it's unconscionable.
I'm full disclosure here. When we did that interview, he reached out to us. He reached out to the Golf Channel, and I met him beforehand, before the interview, to kind of talk about what he wanted to talk about. And I think a lot of us in the game knew he was still dealing with some things from the surgery. I don't think anybody knew it was that. I was pretty surprised when he told me. And my immediate response was, are you sure you want to do this? And it's not as though I was trying to talk him out of the interview. It was what comes along with this interview is going to be questions every single week, whether if you're winning, whether if you're missing the cut. People are going to want to know more about this story. And I didn't understand what he was trying to explain to me before the interview, that I need to get this off my chest. It's taking more energy for me to try to hide this than it would if I just let it all out and let the world know that this is what I'm dealing with. To hear him say on this week of all weeks that on Friday afternoon he had one of those triggering moments on Friday, that he did kind of get spooked when someone was behind him, and that he and his caddy and the security team from the PGA Tour was able to work through that. I will say I'm always reluctant when it comes to any athlete to say something is brave that happens on the field to play, because I just don't think that's a very fair comparison to what we see people go through every day in life. But that was brave, and it showed an incredible amount of courage on his part.
I mean, some of the anecdotes that he shared, some of the experiences that he shared, you think back to the Pro Court Championship last year. Remember, that was sort of the final tune-up for that U.S. Ryder Cup team. Everyone was there, and Gary Woodland telling you in that interview that a walking score had come up behind him, spooked him, and all of a sudden he was bawling in the middle of the fairway. He was ducking under the ropes to get into a bathroom where he could cry as well. Like, absolutely terrifying stuff. And the interview that he did said that it released about 1,000 pounds off his back, just letting everyone else know exactly what he was dealing with and that he didn't want to have to feel like he was living a lie. You mentioned burning so much energy on sort of hiding it away from the sports public. He said now he can actually focus that energy on his play, namely really calming down his heart rate while in competition. You mentioned the hypervigilance that he experienced on Friday. He said the last 10 holes, he was a wreck, ended up crying in the scoring trailer. His wife, after the media obligations that he had, after staking himself to that 36-hole lead, said, look, let's just get out of here. Let's just go calm down. And so this does not, quote unquote, fix Gary Woodland by winning the Houston Open. But if anything, it shows that he's not broken. And I think that's just as powerful.
I did not know before I did the story with Gary at the Players Championship that there is no fix. There is no cure for PTSD because you're always going to have the memories. Unless you can make the memories go away, it's always going to be there. This is something that he was going to deal with. I was taken by the idea that getting this off his chest, to your point, was going to be the thing that gave him the energy, even with the questions, even as they kept going. I will also say that in that moment, and since then, I don't think it's been so much he did this to try to help other people. He did this to show that if I have this, if I'm dealing with this, and I'm doing it in this microscope, as you pointed out, I can't imagine a tougher stage to be able to perform on when you're dealing with something like that. I don't think we saw that until Sunday. I think now it's kind of crashed in on him that other people, the world, is watching how he's responded to this, and he's done it in a way that everyone is going to think to themselves, I can do it too.
Yeah, I mean, he has an entire community on the PGA Tour that's behind him, that's supporting him, and we haven't even gotten into the physical aspects of what this means for Gary Woodland. Now that he has sort of the mental release and what he can do physically inside the ropes, you heard it there in his sound, playing as well as he ever has. He's reconnected, he's comfortable, he's confident. The iron play has turned around, the putting has turned around. He's absolutely smashing the golf ball. Again, this does not fix Gary Woodland, but to see the confidence and the happiness in him after what has been a traumatic 2.5 years, it's absolutely beautiful.
You mentioned the physical part of it, the competitive part of it. This opens up so many doors for him. It gets him in the majors. It gets him into all the signature events. As good as he's playing, I'm curious what the ceiling could possibly be. And you talked about the reaction from the golf world. Again, watching Minwoo Lee fire up the crowd walking down that final fairway was really cool. But also, Minwoo took to X, formerly Twitter. One of the best stories in golf. Happy to be a part of it today. Congrats, Gary. And then Tommy Fleetwood jumped on as well. It was always a win, not an if. If Gary Woodland, so proud of everything for you and the family. Huge inspiration to us all. Congratulations.
And just a glimpse at how this victory has transcended not just the golf world, but the sports world. This is Patrick Mahomes, Chiefs star quarterback. Said, awesome to witness the comeback and getting back in the winner's circle. What an incredible moment and performance. Congratulations again to Gary Woodland, now a 5-time winner on the PGA Tour. Welcome back to Golf Today. And on Friday, Tiger Woods was involved in a car accident in Jupiter Island, Florida, just after 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Woods, the only person in his vehicle, reportedly climbed out of the car and, according to responding officer, showed signs of impairment. Tiger passed a breathalyzer test, but he refused a urine test. According to the Martin County Sheriff's Office, Tiger was charged with DUI, property damage, and refusal to submit to a lawful test. Now on Friday night, the Sheriff's Office released this photo of Tiger when he was booked. And then just after 11 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, Tiger was seen leaving the jail sitting in the passenger seat of an SUV being driven away.
Now you take a look at Tiger Woods' history with car accidents. In November of 2009, he crashed his SUV into a fire hydrant in a tree outside of his then home in Windermere, Florida. He was later cited for careless driving. In 2017, in May, he was arrested on DUI charge near his home in Jupiter, Florida, after police found him asleep behind the wheel of his parked vehicle. And then in February of 2021, he was involved in a single car crash in Rolling Hills Estate, California. He suffered severe injuries to his right leg and ankle and had to have multiple surgeries. And then last Friday, he was involved in a rollover car crash in Jupiter, Florida. Lav, you haven't had a chance to really talk about this much. What was your initial reaction when you heard the news of Tiger?
Yeah, look, there's so many tentacles to this one. Some of them are pretty important, too, when you look at the future of the PGA Tour and the future competitions committee. Certainly the Ryder Cup and the PGA of America has a decision to make as it relates to the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy. Right now, though, my focus is on the individual. And I think all of us as human beings want to be empathetic in this situation. Tiger's flawed, just like all of us are. It's been certainly a traumatic 15 or so years with all the injuries and all the surgeries that he has had to endure. I don't think any of us can understand what the life that he has had, basically, since he was a tot. Just living his life in a fishbowl. But at some point, Rex, there has to be a reckoning. And this is the second time that Tiger has been suspected of DUI. This is at least the fourth time that we know of that he has endangered not just himself, but he's also put others at risk when he has gotten behind the wheel of his vehicle. And so it's reckless, it's dangerous, and at some point, again, there needs to be a reckoning. There needs to be some sort of accountability. There needs to be some sort of responsibility for what this is, and what this is reckless behavior.
It has been difficult reporting this story over the last few days because everything with Tiger Woods is exaggerated. You and I did a 40-minute podcast on Wednesday night after his TGL final. I think a lot of people probably found that a little strange, but that's what Tiger Woods does. He multiplies everything times 10. To be clear, just to touch on the legal avenue here, what he's facing is two misdemeanors. I'm not dismissing this. I know how serious these charges are, but I've spoken with multiple lawyers. At worst, he's going to get his license suspended for 6 months to a year, and that's if he's actually found guilty of this DUI charge. He's going to have to pay fines between $500 and $1,000. There's going to be some community service work. There's a couple of things that go along with this, but having the conversations with Rich Lerner, with Brandon Chambly, with everybody here at the Golf Channel the last few days, there's nothing that happened on Friday afternoon that would, for example, keep him from playing the Masters. The sheriff said himself there were no injuries. There's no physical reason why Tiger Woods, if he was ready on Friday morning, that he's still not ready on Friday afternoon to play the Masters. It's the personal side that you're going to have a hard time reckoning with here, because what he needs right now to deal with whatever it is that's going on in his life is probably to take some time and step away. But as you pointed, the layers to that get very, very complicated. It's one thing not to play the Masters. He's supposed to be in Augusta next week anyway. He's opening up a 9-hole course at the Patch that he did in conjunction with Augusta National Golf Club. You would think he'd want to be at the Champions Dinner for Rory. But beyond that, what he means to the PGA Tour as an elder statesman, as an ambassador, as a leader on the Future Competitions Committee, it is a complicated process to think about what's next for Tiger Woods. But we can all go back to the one thing that I think all of us can kind of cling to here. He needs to do whatever's best for him.
Yeah, absolutely, because all of these things, Rex, are intertwined with his golf, the personal aspect and the professional aspect. And there was certainly, I think, sort of a sad irony to the timing and this going down on Friday. Keep in mind, this was when TGL released its ratings for the TGL Championship, in which nearly a million people had tuned in just to watch Tiger hit four full shots, proving yet again that Tiger Woods is the needle in golf. People just want to see him play. On Friday, there was also the reporting that he'd met the registration deadline for the U.S. Senior Open later this year. And so you can't really remove one aspect of Tiger the golfer versus Tiger the person. They're all intertwined, but I'm with you. At some point, he needs to just take care of himself and stop getting on this hamster wheel of playing golf, getting hurt, the added toll on his body, needing to medicate with pain medications because he's in chronic pain, as we've discussed so many times on this show. At some point, just remove yourself from the situation, get the help that it clearly appears that he needs, and then we can have a conversation about what it means for his competitive future.
One person who has seen Tiger on this hamster wheel really almost his entire life, at least since he's been playing golf, is Jaime Diaz, Golf Digest writer at large. Jaime, thank you so much for joining us. When you first heard this news, what were your emotions?
Oh, gosh, you know, kind of overwhelmed, kind of a reliving of 2010, which I thought was extremely traumatic for Tiger. You know, we watched Gary Woodland. I thought Tiger almost suffered his own sense of PTSD in 2010 after his scandal and after the coverage of it and all the shame and embarrassment. It's not to this degree, and there's been a lot of context since then, but still it's a mistake that I know he regrets, and he is feeling right now like he's got to start over. And maybe that's a good thing. But my emotion at that time was sympathy and empathy. I think what Ryan said about empathy is really true right now. You know, he's given us a lot. He's held himself back because he gave so much. I think fame is corrosive. I think, you know, it makes people mess up. It messes people up, especially if you encountered it at a very young age. So, you know, I think Tiger's been playing catch up in some ways with life. And sometimes it catches up with him.
Jaime, who or what do you think can help Tiger end this pattern of behavior?
Well, I think himself, really. I mean, I think he just has to accept, look, I can't control everything. I'm not the authority on everything. I have to listen. I have to, you know, humble myself. I can't think of vulnerability as a weakness. I have to think of it as a strength now. And, you know, I think Gary Woodland showed that. Tiger's in a much different situation. He'd be under 1,000 times more scrutiny and might not be comfortable for him to be openly vulnerable. But I think being open with people and just, you know, being open to therapists and really taking seriously what they have to offer and the self-knowledge that comes with it. He's 50 years old. You know, it's time, if you can, you know, to understand yourself. It's hard enough in life to understand ourselves. But after you hit 50 or so, the reflection should be a little bit more introspective and humbling. And I think if he can put himself in that frame of mind and not the competitive frame of mind where, you know, winning solves everything and just be tough and just outgrit everybody, that makes you remote. That doesn't make you a whole person. So try to be a whole person as much as possible. Again, that's a journey that all of us fail at, but it's one worth taking, and I hope he takes more of it.
This is his fourth auto accident, Jaime, and yet he still remains the needle that moves everything in golf. Will this at all impact his legacy? And if so, what would it possibly mean?
Well, I think it'd go either way. I think if he responds in a way that is, you know, sort of in denial, I think it would hurt his legacy. I think if he's openly accepting of, as you said, the reckoning, the responsibility, the new phase of life, and starts playing again, hopefully, without being hurt, and playing for the real joy and expressing that genius that he has on the golf course, I think that's so enhancing to his image. And I think, you know, we all just love to watch him play. He's a genius. And I hate to see that taken away from him. But I hope he employs it in a way that is relatable, as opposed to, you know, being kind of this robot of efficiency and cold. I'd like to see him warm up. And if he does that, I think this second chapter, fourth chapter, eighth chapter, whatever it is one that we'll regard in a positive way and will enhance his legacy.
I mean, one of the things that Rex and I talked about on the pod show on Sunday night was the fact that the common denominator in all of Tiger's struggles over the past 15 years is that he just keeps trying. And I think in some respects, it's admirable that he keeps trying to rebuild his body and he keeps trying to come back to competitive golf. But what do you think of the idea that Tiger Woods should just stop playing golf and focus on himself?
Well, I think he can have both. I think golf's a big part of him. You know, Ryan, I don't think golf's antithetical to him being happy or putting pressure on himself in a way that, you know, if he just becomes this one-dimensional person. I think it's just something that's very, you know, synonymous with him. And the better he can play golf for the right reasons, because he loves it, because he wants to be closer with his son, because, you know, he can express himself as an artist, those are things that I think are healthy and will help heal him. Now, if it's going to hurt his body and he's just, you know, basically on, as you say, a hamster wheel of injury, no. But, you know, we've seen him come back in a way that was miraculous in 2017 when he had the fusion surgery. I mean, he was more done then than he looks now in terms of physically. And yet he came back without pain and he built and he won the tour championship and he won the Masters and it was miraculous. And okay. And he was, by the way, incredible at Royal Melbourne in the President's Cup as well. That's still in there, not maybe to the full extent, but just I think it's an honorable effort to try to reach it. And it doesn't mean that he has to become less of a human being. I think he can have both. And I think we've seen it with other great players in their twilight years. Sure, it's hard to leave the top flight of competition. There's a big adjustment period and your ego is hammered a little bit. But then when you do it gracefully, it's a beautiful thing. And we see whoever it is, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player. I think Arnold had a very hard time with it. And yet we ended up loving him more at the end. So I think Tiger's got a shot at that.
I mean, I'm not sure anyone has sat down for more one-on-one interviews with Tiger Woods over the course of his career. If you got that opportunity now, what would be the first question in the notebook?
Hey, man, go for happiness. Can you do it? Can you do it? I think he can. Make that the challenge. He loves challenges. Make that the challenge.
Jaime, if you're Brian Rolapp, CEO of the PGA Tour, if you're PGA of America leading the search committee for the next U.S. Ryder Cup captain, what do you do with Tiger, who, of course, is at the forefront of both of those issues for those organizations?
Well, I think, first of all, give him space to get well physically, mentally. And then, you know, I think really have a talk about, you know, this commitment that you're making, which has been very honorable and which helps Brian Rolapp immensely, because Tiger is the most, in many ways, credible person in golf about golf. And Brian comes in saying, look, I'm deferring to these golf guys. And who better to defer than Tiger in terms of what the game needs, perhaps. But the commitment itself, you know, it's a bureaucratic thing. It's a Zoom call thing. I mean, maybe that's something that right now Tiger Woods doesn't necessarily need ideally. And so if there's a graceful way to make him a consultant where he still has the weight of his opinion, but maybe not the time commitment, I could see that being a nice realistic medium ground. It's all up to Tiger. If he really wants, I know he feels and has spoken about, you know, a feeling of responsibility to what he's leaving behind. on the PGA Tour, and he wants to shape it in a way that he thinks is best. But I don't think that that necessarily requires him being in kind of the grind of an office sort of environment, even though it might be on Zoom. The point being only that I think his voice, his opinion, can be heard by Brian Rolapp and by others in a less formal way and yet still have the weight.
Jaime, as always, thank you so much for your insight.
Thanks, guys.
Stick around. More golf today. Back after this. Mel Reed was on the call at the Ford Championship this past week and joins us now. And Mel, it's great to see you. Let's talk about the hottest player in the game, Hyo-Joo Kim. What has impressed you most?
Well, do you know what's funny? We've been saying for absolutely years, like, how does she not win more? Because she is just so good, so consistent. She's won in her teens, like she was winning a bunch in her 20s, and now again in her 30s. I mean, the consistency that she has, the ball flight she has, she just does not have any movement on her ball whatsoever. I think what was really stand out to me was the way that she putted the last kind of couple weeks. Last week was a bit of a gritty win. This week in Phoenix, I mean, her putting was just absolutely sensational. She was just holding on from everywhere. And whenever you kind of felt that the door was maybe slightly ajar, she just slammed it shut straight away. And just her course management as well. I mean, that course was, you know, it wasn't exactly the trickiest golf course, but you still had to hit them in the right places. And her and her caddy, Travis, just did a sensational job all week of just putting themselves in the right spots. And you combine that with fantastic putting, you know, you're going to end up pretty close to the top of the leaderboard as she has. She's had a great 2 weeks.
Now, that was a perfect way to set me up, because as you look at her career and everything she's accomplished, certainly the last 2 weeks, she has been dominant. If I asked you, why does she only have one major, what would be your answer?
I don't know. I think it's baffling to all of us, to be quite honest with you. I mean, you know, she's not exactly the longest player. I think that sometimes can be a hindrance. It has to be a certain golf course. You know, when she won at Evian, you don't need to hit it long there. It kind of, a lot of them holes take driver out of your hands, so it sets up well for her game. You get her on a US Open or like a KPMG, you know, British Open, where these are big golf courses where you do have to have a little bit of muscle to it. I think that that is where maybe she will struggle a little bit. She's going to have to play kind of a really 100% game. But listen, it's just baffling to me. I think there's definitely been some major golf courses that she could really have suited by. And look, the way that she's getting off this year, this is not the end for her, I don't think. I think she's going to win again this year.
Mel, when you look at Nelly, she's gone 1-2-2. She's a combined 54 under par so far this season. How has she rediscovered that form from 2024?
Yeah, look, I think last year, you know, not winning, I mean, you would think she played great last year. You know, we're kind of nitpicking on things here, but there was never going to be another season where she was not going to win. And I think she's done some fantastic work. She did some off-season work with Dave Whelan, getting the club a little bit more neutral at the top, not as laid off. And I can already see them improvements just from looking at her hitting golf balls. It's a much more neutral ball flight, starting online a lot easier for her, especially with the incredible rotation that she has through the golf ball. I think that she would like... she would love Hyo-Joo to have a week off so that she can maybe win at an event, because, you know, she's been unbeatable. But look, I think the thing with Nelly, it's very encouraging. She obviously won at Hilton, then she's finished second. And so if there's any sort of weakness that we're seeing in the last couple of weeks in Nelly, it's probably these little short putts in big moments. I think that if she starts to iron them out a little bit, I think this could be a really, really good year again for Nelly Korda.
Another perfect segue, because that's what I wanted to ask you. We're clearly picking nits for a player who has lost, again, just one player all season long in 2026. But what are you seeing with Nelly Korda's short putting? And do you think it's a big issue with major championship season approaching?
I don't know. If I'm honest, I'm looking at it, I'm thinking maybe it is an issue. And then I'm looking at it thinking maybe she's trying to get rid of it before the season of the major starts. So that's what I'm hoping. I think whenever Nelly Korda is at the top of the leaderboard, especially a major championship, that's a great thing for the game. It's a little bit concerning because they're in big moments. You know, a couple of weeks ago, it was on the 17th hole, she missed a 2-3 footer. Okay, had a bit of movement, but she still missed it. And then yesterday, you know, she got within one, you know, going on to the 9th hole, and then she had, a 2-3 footer. Again, yes, I had a bit of movement to give her credit, but still didn't even touch the hole. And then again on 15. And so I think that for me, it's a little bit of a concern, but the only way that she's going to overcome this is by putting yourself in these situations again. This is not going to get resolved through practice. You know, you can hit as many 2, 3, 4 footers as you want. It's getting in these situations and having the confidence that she is able to hold these putts. But again, everything else about Nelly is going in a really, really nice direction for me. Like I said, I think that her swing looks a lot more stable at the top. I love the way that she was hitting it this week. It's just these little short putts, but hopefully she's getting rid of these before the major, kind of before the season of all the majors is happening.
Last night at the end of coverage, I thought you did a great job of sort of breaking down with Grant the differences in these two victories for Kim. In your mind, was this week a little bit more dominant than last week? And really, what was the difference? I know it was same player at first and second, but it felt different.
It definitely felt different. Last couple of weeks ago was definitely a bit more gritty. She had to work a little bit harder. She had to, you know, get up and down when she needed to. And she did, by the way. Like, it was a very gritty win, especially when Nelly Korda's breathing down your neck. This week, I just felt like she was very much in control. And I think what impressed me most about her this week was, you know, that this week is not necessarily the toughest golf course that we play all year, but it's hot. You know, the weather was, it was going to be really draining for a lot of these players physically. And I think coming off a win, you're mentally already pretty drained anyway. So for the fact that she came out as fresh as she did, I mean, she shot 261s last week. I mean, that's just absolutely insane. Like, to shoot 261s in a season, to shoot 161 in a season. But she did it on the same golf course twice. So I think that she's very much in control of her game. She's very, very stoic. I mean, we see this week in, week out with her. But like I said, what I think impressed me the most with her was whenever Nelly did get within striking distance, boom, shut the door, birdie, you know, sits it on 10. So I think that that's what is most impressed with me with her the last couple of weeks.
Mel, you were part of the LPGA's new campaign under Craig Kesler and Chad Coleman, sort of ushering in a new era of the LPGA. What do you make of the tour's efforts to bring in new fans?
I can definitely see a difference. The effort is definitely being made there. I think if you just look at the social media on the LPGA, it's night and day from what it was a year, 2 years ago. You know, they did a fantastic piece on the rookie Natasha Un, and they're trying to really tell these stories and bring these stories alive for a lot of these fans. They still have a little way to go, for sure. We definitely need some more cameras on the ground. I think when when Lydia Ko was on that 59 run and we didn't really have that many shots, you know, that's a little bit of an issue. That's difficult to tell that story and how cool of a moment that could have been. But look, I think Chad Coleman is doing a fantastic job. I really do. I'm a huge fan of him. Obviously a huge fan of Craig Kesler. We are a little bit in the honeymoon stage, but I think that having TrackMan is great as well for the fans, you know, to see on TV. So listen, I really do think that considering they've just started this, I think they're making really, really good strides already.
Yeah, you can already see the improvement with the LPGA product. Mel Reed, great to get your insight and opinions as always. Have a great rest of your week.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, let's see who is in the race to the CME Globe. No surprise here after back-to-back wins. Hyo-Joo Kim sits in the top spot thanks to a run of great play. Nelly Korda checking in at number two with world number one Gino Titicun in the third spot. Hello and welcome. It's Rex, It's Lav for the second hour. Gary Woodland cannot get enough. It's still amazing, still a little bit shocking, still very emotional. But when you look at what could possibly come next, I think we touched on it in the first hour, the idea that this win qualifies him for the majors, this win qualifies him for the signature events. It's going to be so much fun to see how this game that he has retooled with Randy Smith and what is clearly some clarity of thought.
Yeah, I mean, he even said it. This is the best that he has ever played. That's pretty striking from a player who has now won 5 times on the PGA Tour, has that major championship victory with the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. You look at what he did driving the golf ball, Rex, in Houston, was absolutely pounding the golf ball. 196 mile an hour ball speed for a 41-year-old is unfathomable. The changes he's made equipment-wise with his irons going to a stiffer shaft because all of a sudden he has the speed, the strides that he has made with his putting. With his coach, Phil Kenyon. This is a complete player now. Again, for a player who has won 5 times on the PGA Tour. So then you couple all of the physical gifts, which have been apparent
ever since Gary Woodland was on the PGA Tour with the clarity of thought that you have, knowing as well that you have an entire PGA Tour community rallying behind you, I think that can be very, very powerful.
I keep going back to what he told me at the Players' Championship when we know, I feel like every player on the PGA Tour now is an athlete, but this is an elite athlete, a guy who played college basketball. He has been special his entire time on the PGA Tour. And my response to him was, you have tried to outwork everyone your entire career. Every time there was a problem, your solution was, I can go out and fix this on the range. This was one he couldn't. So I am curious. You're right. The physical gifts are still there. Even his putting is probably what impressed me the most. He finished first for the week in strokes gained putting in Houston by a long shot. So if he does anything close to that the rest of the way, it's going to be fun to watch. But it's the other half of it that allows him to move beyond sort of these mental setbacks. It's that 1,000 pounds that he said came off his shoulders. He didn't have to outwork it. He just needed to embrace it.
Rory McIlroy, Scotty Scheffler, you could make the argument that Gary Woodland will be the most popular player on the property at Augusta National as he makes his return to Augusta National. And if you somehow missed it, what an amazing moment we witnessed on Sunday. Gary Woodland winning again for the fifth time on the PGA Tour. The victory coming in his 151st start since his last victory at the 2019 U.S. Open. Early March, Woodland went public with a PTSD diagnosis in the wake of that brain surgery back in 2023. Here is Woodland after his win.
Obviously, coming out with what I'm battling a couple weeks ago definitely freed me up a little bit. It took a lot off my plate and allowed me to focus my energy where I need to, and that's on me and taking care of myself so I can chase my dreams. And I can, you know, and I, like I said, when I said what I said and came out with it, it was like, if it gives me enough energy for one better shot around, or if it gives me 5 more minutes where I can spend with my kids when I'm home, and it's doing that. It's helped me, and I wasn't in a place to do it a long time ago, a year ago, I can tell you, but we're getting better.
In that final putt today, you kind of looked up and seemed to exhale. What was that feeling like in that moment?
Just thankful. I'm blessed to be able to chase my dreams. There's no doubt about that. And I know it's hard, but life's hard, right? Everybody's battling something. And I've told myself the whole time, I wasn't going to let this thing in my head win. From when I was diagnosed with this thing on my brain, the whole thing was I wasn't going to let it win. And today was evidence of that.
And let's look at more reaction from across the golf world. This from Justin Rose on X. What a moment. What an inspirational story. Congratulations to Gary Woodland and all Team Woodland. And this, Justin Thomas, just speechless. Incredible, inspiring stuff from Gary Woodland. Time now for our Golf Today roundtable. We welcome in our very own Todd Lewis and Steve Sands. Steve, I'll start with you. We're taught in journalism school, you root for the story, not the player. Why is Gary's story the best in golf right now?
Oh, man. I mean, for so many reasons. First of all, in my 36 years of being a sportscaster, I'm not sure I've ever met a better human being. And there's a great Winston Churchill quote that I've used before. It's rare in a human being where you see both great and good. Clearly, he's a great golfer. He's also a really good guy. His wife, Gabby, is fabulous. And they've been through a lot together. It has been a very rough ride here the last few years. And for him to be able to hold it together, the adulation he heard from the crowd, trying to keep it together yesterday in the booth when he was getting emotional early in that final round, when he was kind of taking deep breaths kind of thing. And then you saw Minwoo Lee and Nikolai Højgaard coming down 18, clapping. You don't see that often in professional sports. Everybody, I think, was rooting for Gary yesterday, even though we're not allowed to root. I think everybody in the sports world, not just the golf world, was rooting for Gary yesterday. It is a tremendous story.
Yeah, absolutely. We all know the quality person that Gary Woodland is. And I mean, you think about his path. I mean, September of 23, having a lesion removed from his brain, he wrote letters to his kids in case he didn't survive that. And then that remarkable interview, Rex, you had with him, the fact that he was talking about the PTSD that he's dealing with. And yes, he's trying to obviously extend his career and win, which he accomplished yesterday. But after that surgery, he's done some remarkable things to help those in need. I want to share a personal story. I have a family member who was diagnosed in December 2024 with something called glioblastoma. If you don't know what that is, it is a very aggressive, incurable brain cancer. And in January of 25, I asked Gary if he would record a message for my family member. And he, you know, I was expecting, hey, a little 15-second, hey, hang in there kind of thing. He grabbed my phone and walked away from me and recorded a very lengthy message. And in that message, which I watched again yesterday, he said, you know, you and I were put on this planet to be fighters. I would like to tell you that it's going to be easy, but it's not. But hang in there. If I can do it, you can fight through it too. And I say that story because after the surgery, Gary has, and he talked about it yesterday in his post-round press conference, he has a spirit to help others now, inspire others who are going through tough times. He even said, if you're going through something difficult right now, look at me and keep fighting. And I think that that's remarkable. Gary Woodland, we say this sometimes about players, that they're great players but better people, and it can kind of be cliche-ish, but Gary Woodland could win 20 major championships and 100 PGA Tour events. But he's going to be remembered in my eyes and many that have been in touch with him, and the fact that he is a great father, great husband, a great friend, and somebody who really does have a spirit of service and wants to use his journey to inspire others.
Tilo, thanks so much for sharing that personal anecdote. I certainly echo a lot of your sentiments there. Steve, when you glance across the entire sports landscape, what Gary Woodland achieved on Sunday, winning on the PGA Tour while battling all the demons of PTSD, do you find any other comp, or is what Gary Woodland doing right now pretty singular?
I was actually thinking about that, Ryan, last night when he was going through it, trying to get that win. And then when you text me this morning about the subject matter, I was thinking, you know, Michael Jordan, when his father was murdered 3 years later, he led the Bulls to its fourth title. And it was on Father's Day when they won that fourth of six NBA titles. But it was the first one after his father had been murdered. I was thinking about Muhammad Ali after the title was getting stripped from him for dodging the draft in the late 60s. And so many things going around there at that time in his life. And then 7 years later, winning the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman. I was thinking of Dan Jansen, who I did speed skating with in the 2014 Sochi Olympics. His sister passed away. He had all those heartbreaks in 88 and 92 when he was the favorite. And then he won the 1,000 meters in Lillehammer in 1994 after all of that. But the thing that made me think the most about what happened yesterday was Monica Seles. Monica Seles was the best player in the world. I'm not saying Gary's the best player in the world, but I'm comparing the situations. Monica Seles was the best tennis player in the world. She was stabbed during a match in Germany when she was on top of her game. And then a couple of years later, dealing with PTSD, that's where the comparison comes in, dealing with all the PTSD that she had dealt with after being stabbed during a match while playing professional tennis at the highest level. She went on and won the 1996 Australian Open, which is one of the four Grand Slam events, the major championships of tennis. So to me, the Monica Seles in 96 Australian Open win, dealing with PTSD in a different scenario than Gary Woodland was dealing with this past week, but they're awfully similar to me.
Steve, that's a great point. Todd, I wanted to ask you, you have covered Gary now for a really long time. Knowing what we know now, the PTSD, how triggering it can be to be under that microscope on the PGA Tour with thousands of people watching you day in and day out, what do you think the degree of difficulty was?
Absolutely. I mean, fear is an overwhelming emotion, and fear leads to lack of confidence, which ultimately is, you know, confidence is the most precious commodity for a PGA Tour player. But yeah, for him to have those days where fear was just overwhelming him due to this PTSD, I didn't realize the degree of the PTSD he had. And he told me he's been struggling still, but until he sat down with you, Rex. But to think about that and to think about everything that he could have lost and he still probably thought he could still lose. I mean, because this is, you know, he's not given a clear bill of health that this is never going to come back again. So for him to overcome all of that fear associated with that PTSD is remarkable. This is a monumental win. I mean, this is a monumental story, not only in golf, but in all of sports. And, you know, if if and he's right, if you are going through a tough time, just think about what Gary Woodland is doing and how he's persevered and fought. And that is such an inspiring individual that people should just hang their hat on.
Now let's pivot to the weekend's other big news. That would be Tiger Woods. He was arrested for DUI in South Florida. I'll start with you, Steve, but I want to hear from you as well. Todd, what was your original reaction to the news?
Well, I mean, I was sad. I was glad that nobody was severely injured. I hope that whatever the situation is going on in Tiger's world, and we don't know that, nor should we know that, but whatever is happening in his world, I hope that he is okay, and I hope that he gets the help he needs if he does need help. And I think that the biggest takeaway is that nobody was injured. This has happened before. This is a multiple time thing with Tiger as far as car accidents go. And again, aside from the one that was in California, you know, when Tiger was pretty banged up and really injured, nobody else got injured there. That's one of the most dangerous things that you want to deal with when you're driving a car, whether you're first learning when you're 16 years old or all the way to the end of your life. So I hope he's okay. I hope his family's okay. I am certainly glad that the driver of the other vehicle was okay as well.
Tilo, you've been a part of our news coverage over the past couple of days as it relates to Tiger Woods' address. And I'm curious, how do you reconcile what Tiger Woods is going through personally with all that needs to be done professionally when you're looking at the PGA Tour and the Future Competitions Committee, as well as the sort of outstanding decision that needs to be made by the PGA of America in relation to the U.S. Ryder Cup captaincy?
Well, I think all the professional stuff is a little bit on the back burner now. I've been going through a variety of emotions and thoughts, too, with all of this. Number one, it's an example of the fact that Tiger still is in chronic pain, and he's been so probably at least a third of his life, given all of his injuries. And because of that, he needs to be medicated. But I can't stress this enough. With that comes great responsibility if you're going to need that medication, but it seems to be a part of his everyday life. So that's the most important thing. You know, and professionally, I mean, things have been going so well for Tiger, it seems, on and off the golf course. He's in a positive relationship now. His daughter, Sam, is going to Stanford. His son, Charlie, is committed to play golf at Florida State. He's been heavily involved in bringing a lot of passion to the boardroom and helping the PGA Tour shape its future. He's the chair of the Futures Competitions Committee. He's on the PGA Tour Policy Board. He's part of the board of directors for the PGA Tour Enterprise governance. So this is, you know, this is a setback. And how is he going to handle this? How is he and his team going to handle it? First and foremost, he can only answer what's going on with him. He needs to take personal inventory and look in the mirror and figure out, hey, you know, if this is an issue, I need to fix it. But I will say too, you know, we all make mistakes and Tiger Woods' mistakes are very public and everybody gets to see them. So hopefully he learns from this and can grow from this.
Steve, we've seen this in Tiger's career. There's an ebb and flow to everything he seems to do. What impact, if any, do you think this is going to have on his longstanding legacy?
Oh, I don't think it has anything to do with his legacy. I think we're far beyond that. There's been so many things that have happened on and off the golf course with Tiger, you know, in its totality, when his career is complete and, you know, you or Ryan or one of the smart guys write a book about the entire legacy, I think that this obviously will be included in that. I think that all the mistakes should be included in everybody's documentary, whether it was John Elway's or whether it was Tom Brady's or whoever it is, and Michael Jordan, whoever it is in sports, when you reach that type of stratosphere. But you know, when you think of the 82 wins and the 142 consecutive made cuts and the 15 major championships and all the things he's brought to the game, I don't think that the things that have happened to him off the golf course are a footnote or a side note, but I do think that they will, you know, be far below the accomplishments that he's had on the golf course. But for sure, I think it's part of the story, and I think it's fair for anybody who does decide to write that or who does decide to show a documentary. I do think it's fair to include all the things that have made Tiger Woods not only the greatest golfer of his generation, but one of the most fascinating athletes and one of the biggest stars we've ever seen in all of sports.
All right, you guys are both going to be in San Antonio this week for the Valero Texas Open, the final event before the Masters. Pretty good field. Ludwig Åberg, Jordan Spieth, Tommy Fleetwood, Colin Morikawa, all in the field. Todd, what are you most curious in seeing this week? Again, the final one before Augusta.
Well, you mentioned him. I'm interested in Jordan Spieth. Jordan Spieth has been pretty solid this year. He seems to be trending in a positive direction. He's won on this golf course before. He's won this event before. And, you know, he is an artist. And Augusta National seems to demand artistry when you play there. And he loves it there. And he's been in contention many times there. So I think Jordan Spieth is he has a chance here to continue some momentum. And I would not be surprised to see him become a factor at Augusta National. I think he is moving in a really good direction. If he goes backwards here, you know, that could stall him a bit. But I think Jordan Spieth is somebody that I'm going to keep an eye on this week and obviously at Augusta National.
Thank you both for taking the time. Looking forward to both your coverage from San Antonio.
Got it, guys.
Stay with us. When Golf Today returns, we're joined by Folds of Honor founder, Lieutenant Colonel Dan Rooney, who has supported Willen throughout this journey. We'll be right back.